3. We can reply together.
O son of Pratha, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastier of the enemy. Arjuna was addressed as the son of Pratha, who happened to be the sister of Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Therefore, Arjuna had a blood relationship with Krishna. If the son of a Kshatriya declines to fight, he is Kshatriya in name only. And if the son of Brahmana acts impiously, he is a Brahmana in name only. Such Kshatriya and Brahmanas are unworthy sons of their fathers. Therefore, Krishna did not want Arjuna to become an unworthy son of Kshatriya. Arjuna was the most intimate friend of Krishna, and Krishna was directly guiding him on the chariot. But in spite of all these credits, if Arjuna abandoned the battle, he would be committing an infamous act. Therefore, Krishna said that such an attitude in Arjuna did not fit his personality. Arjuna might argue that he would give up the battle on the grounds of his magnanimous attitude for the most respectable Bhishma and his relatives, but Krishna considered. Krishna considered that sort of magnanimity mere weakness of heart. Such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. Therefore, such magnanimity or so-called non-violence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna.
So what is, if you read this verse, right, translation, so what does it indicate? What point you can get from reading this translation? What does it indicate? What is Krishna trying to do here in this particular time?
A person is a Brahmana Kshatriya based on the action, not by just mere birth.
Yeah.
If he is born to Kshatriya, and if he doesn't do the Kshatriya Dharma, then he is Kshatriya only for the name.
If you read the translation, yeah, that's correct point, but if you just the translation part, not the purport.
Oh, okay.
So if you just read this, right? O son of Pratha, do not yield to this degrading impotency.
Mm-hmm.
It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. So is Krishna trying to?
Goad him.
Huh?
Provoke him or
yes.
Goad
him. So he's instigating, right? Basically he's provoking Arjuna to fight, right? So that's the main essence of this one. So, yes.
So Arjuna so far was like, you know, in for so many reasons he gave, right? To not to fight and kind of he knew, he was very confident about his stand, right? But what was Krishna's reaction to that? See, that's what we can understand. From Krishna's point of view, how does Krishna feel about Arjuna's reasons or, you know, so many explanations for not to fight? So Krishna is deciding them as, like, if we ask a question like, what are the two names Krishna calls describing Arjuna's compassion? So he is using the point names, degrading impotence. So that is Klaibhyam. And the second one is Hrudaya Daurbalyam, is weakness of heart. So Krishna is describing Arjuna's so-called compassion as impotence. Means what is impotence?
Incapable.
So potent is, I'm potent to give birth or potent to do things. With qualified ability, everything is there. And impotent means I'm not able to do. Right? And that one. and he's also calling him weakness. It's because of weakness of heart, not because of strength of heart. It's because of weakness of heart is not a encouraging statement, right? It's basically a little bit on a negative side.
Especially for Kshatriyas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why he's trying to.
Yeah. Soft hearted in one sense is good.
Yeah.
Right? But you cannot say it as weakness of heart. Then it's like you're supposed to do something and you don't want to do. So that's how Krishna is describing Arjuna's this thing. And especially as Prabhu said, he wants to use these strong words to provoke Arjuna. It's like, you know, that's why he says, arise. No, he's as if, you know, somebody is sleeping, relaxed, right? You really want to say strong things to wake them up, right? So that's what Krishna is saying. Some strong words like, oh, why Krishna is calling me all these things? It's like that. And then another significance about this is Krishna calls Arjuna Parantapa. So Parantapa means, in the word-to-word translation or in the translation?
Chastiser
of the enemy. So Krishna is saying, you are the chastiser of enemy. So why you are now hesitating to fight your enemies? So you have given this, you have been given this name. So you live up to your name. So what are some of the names of Arjuna so far we discussed from first chapter and second chapter? Son of Kunti, Dhananjaya,
Gudakesha,
Pratha.
Yeah, Pratha. Pratha, and you said something. Kapit. You said
Kapitvaja.
Somebody said Kapitvaja. These are some of the names we discussed about Arjuna. So all of
why
them.
Why is called Dhananjaya? I don't remember the names, but what's
yeah? Because yeah. You because when Yudhishthira was sorry,
yeah.
Sorry,
that's okay. Go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Now he helped Yudhishthira to get the wealth,
wealth
when
conquer Ravana.
When he performed the yajna, right? He collected all the wealth.
And also Krishna used the words Partha. So Partha is son of Pritha, which is Kunti, right? Which
yeah.
is Krishna's sister. So he's
Vasudeva's
sister. Krishna's aunt. So the same thing. He's showing about his valuable family heritage. So you are born in this valuable family heritage, and I am next to you. I am guiding you. So in spite of all of this, you are saying you don't want to fight. Then what will happen to you is you are going to become infamous. That's what in the purport Prabhupada is going to say. That's why in the translation Krishna Prabhupada says it does not become you. Means like you have certain standard, right? A certain, you know, expectations people have out of you. But if you do such things, you are
it's
basically
unworthy.
Underperforming.
Unworthy.
Yes, unworthy. And we give different degrees during at work, right? Underperforming or, you know, equal or over expectations. So he's saying you'll be underperforming and people are going to rule you out. And as Mataji was saying, Prabhupada is clarifying the point that Kshatriya, Brahmana, this is based on qualities rather than birth. But these days it's all, how do people consider things? Brahmana, Kshatriya, how do they call themselves?
Based on birth.
Based on birth. So it's all messed up. But according to Bhagavad Gita, verse Krishna directly says, you know, it's based on guna and karma. Guna is qualities, karma is activities. Based on these two, somebody is designated as Brahmana or a Kshatriya or so on. So if you are born in a Kshatriya family, but you don't exhibit qualities of a Kshatriya, then you are Kshatriya in name only. So they are Brahmana in a name only is called Brahmana Bandhu. Actually, that's the term. A Kshatriya, there is no name like that. So you'll become just namesake. And the other point in the purport Srila Prabhupada is saying is Arjuna might argue that this, I'm doing this out of my magnanimous attitude, basically out of my compassion. I'm trying to, you know, not, because these relatives are very respectable, I'm going to not fight them. But Krishna, what did Krishna consider such magnanimity? It's mere weakness of heart. So that's what Krishna's view of Arjuna's compassion is, it's weakness. You can see. And such magnanimity or so-called non-violence should be given up by persons like Arjuna under the direct guidance of Krishna.
So in one of the lectures, Prabhupada says, right, as a Kshatriya, if they don't perform their duties, means fighting in war or violence too. So if they don't perform, that means they are committing sin. They are not doing their duty, right? So they are committing sin. So in that, Prabhupada also points out like the capital punishment, as you see the current society, right? So the capital punishment, if somebody murders somebody, right? So right now they are abolishing the capital punishment, most of the states, right? They are all abolishing. So that means whoever is involved in that making decision, right, they get the karma. So what Prabhupada means is, so if somebody kills somebody, so if the king or the government, if they do, like, you know, if they hang them or whatever, so that means they are helping that person who are, you know, that in that position,
culprit.
The murderer, culprit. So they are helping them, because if they don't kill them, then they are going to go to the most hellish situation, and they are going to stay longer. They have to go through more the hellish condition, reactions. Because we heard, right, if somebody murders, that's a sixth type of aggressors. If somebody kills somebody, means they can be killed, so according to the Shastra. So that's what Prabhupada is pointing out, like, you know, this current affair of capital punishment, abolishing capital punishment, that won't work. Basically, the society will get more reaction. And all this thing, Prabhupada, or other one of the lectures I was listening, so in India, I think, so one time,
teenagers,
he said 18 to 20 years in Andhra Pradesh. So they blew up the whole bus at some point, and they killed many people for some the ransom money or something. They blew up, so they killed many people. So they put them in jail, and all this, you know, what you call this organization, right wing organization or something, right? All this social organization,
human rights. Amnesty International.
So they started, you know, they are just 18 to 20 years old, so you cannot hang them. So they did a big protest in all throughout India. And court, you know, if more people come, the court has to cancel the decision, right? So they made it full life imprisonment or whatever. But that's not the correct way. According to Prabhupada, he says that's not the right way. The whoever gave the decision plus whoever supported the decision, they will all have to go through the reactions. But the right thing to do is, if they kill that person or if they hang them, because they deserve, it's not that they don't deserve. If they hang them, that means you are, you know, taking off their reaction immediately. The reaction will get also finished. So they don't have to go through, suffer later in their life.
So, Prabhu, I didn't hear the full lecture what Prabhupada was saying. But there is a point that can be given against that also. I'm not trying to argue here, but I'm just saying logically there is another viewpoint, right? So, one way to look at it is that you are not entitled to take a life. If not even the government is not entitled to take a life. So if you put them in, say, solitary confinement, right, and, you know, lock them away and throw the key away kind of thing, is that better or worse, and why?
No, that's why, right, Prabhupada clearly says he's six kinds of types of aggressors.
Right, right.
So according to the scriptures,
right,
so they deserve that.
Right.
So if somebody kills somebody, that means for them to get rid of their reaction,
yeah,
the only way they can do is through,
can you give this to
us? Give them the capital punishment. So the only way they can relieve their the burden is through capital punishment.
Okay.
There is no other way.
Got it.
So according to the scripture.
No, I got you.
Even you can give different things, as you said, you can put them in solitary confinement.
This
all the
solitary thing is even
more worse. Painful.
Yeah. Crueler
just like
than killing them.
So
I mean,
actually, that so the
from that perspective,
right? So the point I was trying to make is that how are we eligible? To
yeah. So
kill,
that's
but that Prabhu clarified
Shastra.
It because it's yeah,
it's
Shastra,
according to
yeah.
That's why nobody
see, that's
has
the thing,
opinion.
Nobody else can make the decision. Like even if for it, this current day and age, let's say somebody comes and steals from my house. These days, everybody is entitled to have a gun, but and they say, I don't know whether they give us right to shoot. I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, if you are shooting,
it's only in fire.
No.
It is because for trespassing.
Yeah, exactly.
Trespassing.
No, I will tell you one
funny
thing. I will tell
no,
you one funny.
Even here, if somebody is breaking and entering, you can shoot.
You can, yeah.
No,
okay.
I will tell you one funny.
Yeah.
I will tell you one funny thing. So what happened is, I think this is in Washington only. So. Everybody, right? They can have a gun. Even you can buy a gun, keep it. So the law is, so within your property, you can shoot within your property if some thief comes, right? If it's life threatening, yes, you can try to shoot and you can defend yourself.
Correct.
If you cross your property and if you shoot the same person, they will catch you also.
That's manslaughter.
So that's the that's the law.
Minimum manslaughter.
And somebody did that. They chased and they shot one person. Finally, that person ended up in jail.
So. Actually, Prabhu, when I was living in Kent, so there were a lot of break-ins going on in our apartment. So that time, a cop was coming and saying, and so people were asking whether we can own guns. And he said, it's not a safe option. And then he was telling the story. So once it seems somebody did that and they crossed their property line, they shot him.
Yeah.
And since this guy's record was clean, he said, you drag that body back in and put it, we'll look the other way.
My point was I think this is a wrong example, but what I'm saying is generally government doesn't give access to each and every person to make the decision and execute that.
Correct.
So earlier days it's a kings who, because
kings
they were saintly kings, Rajarshis, and they were doing the right decision without partiality, everything, and they took responsibility of the karma in whatever case. So they were entitled to make the decision and they were doing the right way and it was working out. And now modern day king replacement is government. So at best we can say, because there should be some authority.
Yeah.
Otherwise what will happen, right? So government is the one which can be entitled to do. So courts, whatever. So we cannot say nobody is there. Still there is, even modern day age also, there is some authority which can make the decision. So which, if they are doing almost according to Shastras, it's not a problem.
So all the, so the Prabhupada main point was, like, you know, there used to be kings, Rajarishi. So they used to be the authority to do any follow the scriptures and implement the scriptures. That's the main thing. In this age, the government is the authority. So Prabhupada all the time, you know, whenever he traveled around US, all the time, whenever he used to meet even the representative of the governments, he used to tell, you have to be a very qualified representative to be in a government, that status also, right? They have to be, you know, aware of the scriptures. So, and also he points out that all the confusion, the problems, if you see generally, right, we have so many wars, things going on. It's all because of not following the scriptures. Everybody has their own authority. Everybody follows their, creates their own rule. So that's why it causes confusion.
Mm. See, that's the point Prabhupada is telling, right?
He's telling in there.
Yeah, such faults, third line from below, from the end of the purport, such false magnanimity was not approved by any authority. See, that's the thing. We have to ultimately come back to, you know, as we gain more faith in the scriptures, like whatever we are doing, is it really guided?
Yeah.
What is the guiding principle? Is it, you know, what I heard or what I feel or what my parents did, or, you know, what is our authority? So that's why here Arjuna's authority is in doubt. What is Arjuna's authority in all these statements or all these excuses? Right? Krishna is the ultimate authority. He is saying you have to fight and he is saying I don't want to fight. So that's why he is saying it's not approved by any authority.
I have one question regarding Guru Dronacharya. So he is addressed as a Brahmana, but he was giving knowledge on the military act. He wasn't giving the scriptural Brahmanical knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So then
he used all knowledge. If I remember, he used to give all. Like he both Artha Shastra, all the. He knew everything. He's not just the military.
Then he ended up in the
war also.
It's not he's supposed to do, correct? Or
no, I think Dronacharya is. Actually, first clarification is teaching military science also is a proper Brahmanical act, because your main thing is they teach.
Sharing knowledge.
Yes, sharing knowledge. So that is also considered proper Brahmanical act. About war, I think, I don't know whether he or somebody had dwelled this thing. Is it Vishwamitra? Who were like Brahmana as well as Kshatriya.
Vishwamitra,
right?
Yeah. He was a Kshatriya.
Dronacharya is also like that. He's both. So some.
But then there was Kripacharya also. I think he was also.
He's also Brahmana. And,
But in one of the, so my question, not
you were saying
this statement was around, because Arjuna, according to the Dharma Shastra, you know, he was forgiving, right?
Yes.
But that is also scriptures.
Yes.
But that is not the
ultimate authority within the scripture.
It's
like,
not the ultimate authority. Yes. Okay, that's why. So it's basically within that
hierarchy is
not,
there.
Okay.
So you can stick to one thing and you can say, you know, in one scripture they say worship Kali or whatever, and then say, you know, I'm sticking to this authority. But you can be in that limited scope, but somebody who has more knowledge, they will say this is not the ultimate authority.
But then it also depends on time, place and circumstance.
Yeah.
You know, you have to give forgiveness when it is, you know, when there's that circumstance, but not everywhere.
Yeah. Not only circumstance, also guided by authority.
Right.
That's the main thing.
See,
if it's leave to circumstance, then it's up to our mental adjustment when we want to forgive it. So, we have to stick to some principles, like,
yeah, there is something called immediate authority, like for example states, right? They will have their own rule. And something called final authority or, you know, ultimate authority, that's like a federal government. So they rule, even if you have state, they can rule that. So in this case, Krishna is the ultimate authority. So Arjuna has whatever, as you said, he's following Dharma Shastra, like moral codes.
But he's using it to his own convenience.
Yeah, whatever, he gave examples, so many compassion, sinful reaction, this thing. But Krishna is ruling out all this thing. And he's just calling, as we discussed, he's just saying it's a mere weakness of heart. And Arjuna thought that's all... No, the
great glory,
this thing, the reasons not to fight.
See, that's why first chapter when we read, what feeling we get about Arjuna? It's like, you know, he's well versed in Shastras, you know, he's making his stand very clear, and somebody, if we hear just that, we feel, oh yeah, actually he shouldn't be fighting. Makes sense what he's saying. Fear of sinful tradition, sinful reactions, or, you know, destruction of family. That's like a big sequence, right? Women polluted and all these things. So we feel, yeah, it makes sense. But
which
then
is very relevant to what we are
day and age
now, right?
Yeah. But then now we will see, you know, what is Krishna's point of view and how he defeats all these things. Ultimately, ultimate point is if Krishna himself is personally present, he is the Supreme Personality of God, and he is saying something to do, there is no other doubt. There is nothing else. If you do something else, then it becomes sin. That is real definition of sin. Sin is to disobey the orders of the Lord.
Yeah. It's like this. So you are following the textbook, and the person who wrote the textbook is there, right? So just listen to him and you.
Of course, some people may perceive this as, you know, like very. I don't know what to say. The word, like, too much. Subjugation to one person, right? Like somebody may too much, like, you know, why somebody may say why
dictatorship
is
good. Dictatorial is the, you know, the derogatory
sense. Okay, we'll move on to the next
positive.
If it's on spiritual platform, yes, if they have spiritual knowledge, then the authority is good. Otherwise it becomes dictatorship if you don't have the spiritual knowledge.
Next,
we'll go to text 4. Arjuna vacha katam bhishmam aham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishvita yujana puja harisudana. Arjuna vacha katam bhishmam aham sankhe dronam cha madhusudana ishvita yujana.
Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? Purport. Should I go to the purport?
Yeah, please.
Respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather, and Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counter-attacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counter-attack them? Would Krishna even attack his own grandfather Ugrasen or his teacher Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna.
So their teacher came, so they
are. They are loyal to their teachers.
So another Bhagavad Gita class?
Yeah, they are doing eight chapters.
There's one other than this also, I heard.
Yeah.
It's going on third chapter.
Yeah, and there are two more, right?
Yeah, and then Madhavachandra was in still introduction.
Introduction, okay. Yeah, so here Arjuna is saying, Arjuna is calling now Krishna wonderful names. What are the two names he is using for Krishna?
Bhishma.
Madhusudana and Arisudana. So he's killer of demon Madhu and he's killer of enemies. So you know Arjuna is saying now you Krishna called him Parantapa, chastiser of enemy. So now Arjuna is calling Krishna, you are actually killer of the enemies. You are killer of enemies, then why are you asking me to kill my teacher, my grandfather? You are Arisudana, you are Madhusudana. But why are you making me Bhishma Sudana and Drona Sudana instead of, you know, killer of enemies? Like that he is asking. And another thing, basically what he is saying is, Krishna, did you ever attack your own grandfather or your teacher? Or did we ever see you attempting to attack? You didn't do. So why you are asking me to do? So he's, you know, he's putting both in same platform and this friends, right? That's the whole point.
He's
now they are in
the friendly
platform, so they can talk like this. After that he surrenders, then he stops. He says, I'm going to stop all friendly talks now from now on. The disciple and spiritual master relationship is formal and very, there is love, there is respect. At the same time, there is amount of formality to, you know, to have that transfer of knowledge. Otherwise, you know, if suppose friends talk, I say my opinion, he says my opinion, what will happen? Nothing will happen.
Yeah.
But if you know, accept somebody as some kind of, you know, like I want to listen to them, then you will get something.
But how is he challenging Krishna? Because it seems like he just said, killer of enemies, killer of Madhu. How can
I was thinking the same.
Yeah, it's in the purport we read, right? Would Krishna...
How is the purport derived from the statement? Like,
yeah, like nowhere it mentions that, you know, how can you...
So what Prabhupada did is, like he read all the Acharya's commentaries. Actually many of the Acharya's. And he gave the gist of them to us in one shot. So we don't have to. So this is actually given by our Acharya called Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So they have more insights. Some of them have personal realizations or some of them have read it from their spiritual masters. So they have that revealed knowledge. So from that knowledge, Prabhupada is summarizing. Yeah, like that.
So this is called reading between the lines.
Yes, exactly. And actually today when we were reading, we felt it so sweet. No, just if you read translation and purport, you will not get this deeper meanings, right? You know how they are talking to each other and you know what words they are using, what is the context. So these acharyas will reveal to us. That's the whole point about purport actually. If you just read English translation, you can read for 100 times, 1000 times, you will not come to the conclusion, even proper translation without purports. You will not finally come to the proper conclusion. Only if you try to submissively read the purports and hear from Prabhupada. So the way we read it is, you know, as if we are hearing a lecture. Prabhupada is speaking to us. Then, you know, it sinks in.
What was his question though? Your question?
There's no mention of Krishna.
Grandfather,
yeah,
like
grandfather,
Bhima Sudana, Drona Sudana.
So, how did that come into the purport? Interpretation.
So, point Arjuna is making is superiors are not supposed to be offered even a verbal fight. What to speak about fighting with them and killing them? So, that point actually, in Arjuna's context, it's wrong in the sense because Krishna is telling him to do different thing. But that point, if you apply socially now, it's very relevant. Whatever things we are seeing now, it's because of everybody declining their authority. See, at least minimally, you know, you should listen to your parents. Right? That's a minimal thing we start with. And then, you know, you think about maybe, you know, teachers or some, you know, spiritual masters or temple president, some authority system you can build. So that is the minimal thing now people are missing. Kids starting from beginning, they want to, you know, revolt and not accept the superiority, everything. So because of that, it's become a very, let's say nobody wants to be under any authority. So that's the main problem.
Yeah,
another point here is, because why he is saying he doesn't want to kill Bhishma and Drona? Because they are Pooja Arhav. Pooja Arhav means they are worshipped, they are worshipable. Pooja Arhav means one is capable of. And puja means one is capable of being worshipped. So they are worshipable. So instead of, you know, worshipping them, why should I kill them? So if we continue next verse, actually both are so related, because in the purport Prabhupada now says, because Arjuna thinks they are worshipable, right? Because they are for grandfather and teacher. Prabhupada says why they don't deserve worship, or they don't deserve respect. See, let's read this purport and then we'll compare, you know, two purports. Yeah. Then we'll see, you know, how Prabhupada makes up a case to defeat Arjuna's argument according to Krishna's point of view. Okay, we'll read the next verse.
Guru
It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted without blood. According to scriptural codes, a teacher who engages in an abominable action and has lost his sense of discrimination is fit to be abandoned. Bhishma and Drona were obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because of his financial assistance, although they should not have accepted such a position simply on financial considerations. Under the circumstances, they have lost the respectability of teachers, but Arjuna thinks that nevertheless they remain his superiors, and therefore to enjoy material profits after killing them would mean to enjoy spoil tainted with blood.
I thought Bhishma was sworn to the throne. He was loyal to the throne. He said he won't marry and he'll always marry the throne.
Because for his subsistence, right? If he has to live in the kingdom, so he depends on Duryodhana's because Duryodhana is the king now.
Bhishma had no choice, Bhishma had to fight because
there are two reasons, right? One was Bhishma had taken the war to always, you know, retain the kingdom. Nobody can attack or something. He'll try to protect the kingdom. And to do that, he has to depend on, he has to live, right? He has to live his subsistence of his life. Somebody has to support his life. So that means he is depending on Duryodhana for food and all. So that's what Prabhupada is pointing out.
But Duryodhana is not king yet. It would be, he's not king yet, right?
No, but he's acting, you know, he took and he accepted.
He's the prince, next whatever.
Bhishma is fighting for Dhritarashtra, not for Duryodhana. Bhishma is,
Dhritarashtra is like a puppet in India.
Duryodhana was the one who was handling all this. Dhritarashtra was a blind man. So he was just sitting. But Duryodhana was the very cunning guy who was handling all this inside politics.
So actually I heard a statement where Bhishma says to Pandavas that, you know, I already tasted the salt of Duryodhana. So I cannot be disloyal to him. I have to be on his side. So actually there are very, Bhishma's personality is very mysterious, and he's actually, you know, he's one of the 12 Mahajanas. Mahajanas are, these are the people whom, with whom, on whose footsteps we have to follow in order to perfect our devotional service. Imagine that. And that person is Bhishma, who is fighting with Krishna in opposite side. He's very, very, he's a pure devotee of Krishna. And we discussed some of his pastimes, right? Why it happens, all those things. I think Prabhu missed those things. But he is not the person to be disrespected at any cost. But at the same time, there is some external reasons and internal reasons why he had to fight on the opposite side. So just to, for completeness, we will cover that briefly. So external, couple of external reasons are, first thing is he took a vow that, you know, he never, first of all, he doesn't want to marry and have a child, right? Along with that, he said, I'm always going to be with the king and support the king. That's first external reason. And the second reason is, okay, he already wants to be, similarly, he wants to be loyal to Duryodhana. Because he is the, he, you know, he tasted from them, so I want to be loyal. And the other reason is that Krishna wanted this war at any cost. Because there were so many Kshatriyas king, which are very, very powerful, and they were burdening the earth. So he wanted to vanquish all of them at once. He could have done maybe using some natural calamity or whatever. But he wanted to, his plan was to use kings against each other to vanquish them. So for that, this war had to happen. And if Bhishma and Drona, they are very powerful warriors, if they were on Pandava's side, there is no chance of war.
There will not because, be no war. Right?
Yeah, there will not be. Everybody is on Pandava's side. So for that reason, there had to be some people on the, powerful people on the Kaurava side. So, you know, almost equally, and then you can fight. So that's the second reason. And the third one is, that, what was that?
The power, even they are powerful enough.
Yeah, so third reason is Krishna wanted to show, however powerful you are, if you are on the irreligious side, you are bound to lose. So Bhishma and Drona, they are so-called Brahmanas, you know, Kshatriyas, and so powerful, so much this thing, and especially, you know, if you take a vow to be remain celibate, you get lot of austerities, you get lot of what to say, power, mystic powers. And he had the ability to die at his own will. Imagine how powerful he is. And he, but then Krishna showed that he had to be vanquished.
That is the only point I was making, is that maybe I wasn't clear. Although they should not have accepted such a position or simply on financial considerations. So,
yeah.
As I said, Bhishma was one who did not accept the position on financial considerations.
So we have reason, limited understanding. So yeah. That's the thing. So the way to approach it, of course, initially it may be difficult because we may think, you know, we have some background, how do I fit it in? But the way we can probably make little progress is, you know, Prabhupada has more context than us. Essentially because he has faithfully read Acharya's purports in disciplic succession, and he is giving us truly the message without any mixture, adulteration. So we can take it like, you know, okay, maybe now I'm not able to understand. Eventually, I will be, especially if you read Mahabharata in detail, yeah, you'll figure out what are other reasons Bhishma had.
So that's why in this purport, Prabhupada is pointing only one reason.
Yeah.
But as she said, there are internal
reasons. That's what, these
there
reasons,
are internal and external reasons.
See,
why Bhishma was on the.
Yeah, these reasons, if you, even if you read Bhagavad Gita,
yeah,
you'll not
you
figure out
it.
Why Bhishma had to fight the other side. Yeah. Because these are coming from Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, lectures, all
different,
these things, right?
Yeah.
So you may say, somebody may say, oh, how can you say that Bhishma fought because, you know, and the other reason, fourth reason. Fourth reason is Bhishma fought because Krishna wanted to taste the chivalry rasa. Chivalry is fighting spirit. Krishna has many rasas, right? Like we can exchange. Five are primary rasas, right? The Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, and
neutral.
Shanta. And there are seven secondary rasas. Within that, one of it is chivalry. Chivalry is fighting spirit. So these rasas all mix together to make a very wonderful flavor of Krishna. So Krishna loves to experience certain rasas with certain devotees. That's how he created the entities. So Krishna wanted to experience chivalry rasa, and Bhishma Dev's rasa with Krishna is of chivalrous nature. So Bhishma Dev also wanted to experience that rasa with Krishna. So it can happen only when he's in the opposite side. Actually, it is said Bhishma Dev was more fortunate than Arjuna, because Arjuna was behind, he was not even seeing Krishna's face.
Yeah.
But Bhishma Dev was always opposite. He could see, you know, how he's reacting,
it's
what he's seeing. So that was his mercy, mercy given to Bhishma Dev. So there, we know, we discussed this past time, right, where the five arrows are stolen, not stolen. Bhishma Dev
Bhishma Dev had five arrows.
Bhishma Dev has five arrows to kill all the Pandavas. So first, what happens? Duryodhana, he always provokes Bhishma Dev. It's like, you know, you're not fighting your best because you want to show favor to Pandavas, and you're not doing your best. You're not killing them. Then Bhishma Dev suddenly becomes, one day becomes agitated, this thing, and he says, okay, I'm going to take a vow. Tomorrow I have these five arrows. I'm going to use them against the five Pandavas, and end of the day, they will be killed. then Drona says, Duryodhana says, okay, this is a good idea, but I don't trust you, so let me keep my arrows with me.
Yeah,
so Duryodhana takes the arrows that night. And you know, somehow what happens? Arjuna comes to Duryodhana. And we
Krishna
heard in lecture,
says,
somehow means what? By Krishna.
Somehow
something will not happen,
happens,
right?
Yeah, it's
by Krishna. So by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna tells Arjuna, you go to Duryodhana and you ask, because once Duryodhana Arjuna protects Duryodhana, right? Mm. Then Duryodhana says, you ask something, I'm going to give you. Whatever you ask, I'm going to give. Then he says, okay, I will ask later. So he says, okay, you promised me to give whatever I want, so give me the five arrows. He said, okay, take. So he gives. So they came back to Pandava set. Then Bhishma Dev next day, he figures this out and he says, okay, I know this all is happening because of Krishna. So Krishna broke my vow. So my vow was, I am going to use this arrows against Pandavas. He broke my vow. So I am going to make Krishna break his vow. What is Krishna's vow?
What was his
that he will not use
that
weapons.
He will not use weapon in the war. He is going to be charioteer. He is not going to use a weapon. So I am going to make Krishna break his vow. So that was Bhishmadev's determination next day. So Bhishmadev fought so fiercely, nobody
almost
could stop him.
Killed.
Arjuna was also became very much, you know,
almost
about to die, and he's going to attack him at any time. Then obviously Krishna couldn't stop. He couldn't
to save his devotee.
Yeah, two reasons to save Arjuna, he could even break his vow, and in order to protect Bhishmadev's vow, Bhishmadev's second promise that, you know, he's going to make Krishna break his vow, he wanted to break his vow. So Krishna, he doesn't matter to him, you know, whether I withhold my vow or everybody calls me that, you know, I live up to my vow. All he cares about is devotees. So then he takes this chariot wheel and he attacks Bhishmadev.
What did at that time Bhishma do?
Puts everything down.
That shows
that their original nature, that he is actually a devotee of Krishna. All he wanted is that rasa. If he really wanted to fight Krishna or against Pandavas, you know, you would have attacked both of them, right? So there are internal reasons why people are put in certain places in order overall for Krishna's plan to come out. So these things we will know when we hear from Acharyas and Prabhupada.
For this one, right, the many reasons we discussed, the here Prabhupada is just quoting
one reason
on financial assistance. And it makes sense because Duryodhana, Bhishma Dev was depending on, if you eat somebody's food, right, it's even in, that's how we are taught, or in India, right? If you eat in somebody's house, that means we are kind of, you know, indebted to that. So that's what is Prabhupada, for general understanding, is quoting that. But in Bhagavatam, if you read Mahabharata, you come to know about internal reasons and more external reasons. And so in that pastime, so when Bhishma was looking at the Krishna, right, he was coming and running with the chariot wheel. So he, you know, everybody appreciates if you see something, right, beautiful, like, you know. But Bhishma Dev, he was appreciating by seeing the, like, blood on, you know, the Krishna's body.
This very beautiful
sweat.
Bhagavatam, it's discussed so wonderfully.
Very wonderful.
These verses are given, you know, the photo also somebody made, so beautiful
photo.
Krishna is wearing yellow dress and while running, his helmet and dress was, upper cloth was falling off. And he has a chariot wheel and he's sweating. And because of the arrows from Bhishmadev actually shot arrows. He shot arrows because of the arrows, to reciprocate with arrows. Krishna is a transcendental body actually. He doesn't have, it's not made of blood, flesh, everything. But he showed blood to reciprocate with us. With that, you know, and Krishna felt actually, it's like flowers sprinkled by a lover. He didn't feel as if, so Krishna, that's why, you know, he sees the essence. He doesn't see the external things. It's not like, you know, arrows are coming and hitting me. It's like Bhishmadev is exchanging this rasa with me. Oh, I am loving to be exchanging that rasa with him. And this is what Bhishmadev is whole living for actually. That's why after this, he said, okay, now I'm ready to
die.
Like,
yeah,
you know, be, not fight. I don't need to fight anymore. And in the deathbed, he was waiting all the while. Final time to come where he could see Krishna personally. And at that time, in that time when he was passing away, what thoughts he was remembering is this incident where Krishna came with the chariot wheel, fought with me, and the verses he quotes in Bhagavatam during that final moment, it's called passing away of Bhishma Deva. That's a chapter in Bhagavatam. So he quotes all these verses, you know, Krishna had carried the chariot wheel and he came running against me as if, you know, he's taking revenge against my weapons. so beautiful. So what lesson we learn from Bhishmadev is how to pass away. That's what Bhishmadev teaches. How to pass away by meditating on the Supreme Lord until the last minute. So when we said Mahajana, right? So we should we follow Bhishmadev in being in the irreligious side? No. What we should follow from Bhishmadev is how to, all throughout the way, he was just serving Krishna. Even if he's in the opposite side, internally, because Krishna also knows that. Otherwise, when he's passing away, why he has to go with Pandavas to meet him? If Krishna didn't know, if he's in the opposite side and he attacked his devotees, why will Krishna personally go and meet him? So Krishna knows that, but nobody else knows that. So Bhishmadev was willing to put his reputation at risk. Right? Whole world is going to say that you are on the opposite side of Krishna. Nobody will see that, you know, you have some great credit.
And
only
Krishna
devotees.
Also did this Vishnu Sahasra Nama, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Actually,
yeah.
Vyasa wrote it and Bhishma told it to Yudhishthira.
Beautiful prayers.
Yeah.
So that time, right? Before dying.
Yeah.
It
talks about all the Shastras.
Whom should I pray to? Who should I?
Yeah.
That's
when he explains. So what main point is, like, you know, these personalities are very, very special, because to be within Krishna's presence and, you know, part of his game or plan is not ordinary thing. And also within that, everybody has particularly put in a particular position for a certain purpose. We do not know all those things. Slowly, little by little, we are learning.
Yeah.
But especially Mahabharata is so sweet. If you hear a lot of, like you know, things about Mahabharata, you will understand, you know, how these personalities, they play and how everything worked out. Okay, so the correlation between these two purports is, see, in the first, fourth purport, Arjuna is saying they're respectable, right? And that's why I'm not going to fight. But in fifth purport, Prabhupada is saying, you know, they are not worthy of respect. They lost the respectability. Because, first of all, they chose to be on Duryodhana's side, which is opposite to Krishna. And the second, because of financial considerations, they chose to do that. So they lost all the respect as the teachers. Because teachers are supposed to, you know, do their duty regardless of, you know, whether I need a finance or something else, right? I should have certain moral conducts and I should stick to that. You cannot, because of I need something, you know, you cannot change parties like that. So that's why Prabhupada is saying, you know, they lost their respect. And also there were two things. First of all, Bhishmadev, he apparently, he kept quiet when Draupadi was disrobed. So that, for that mistake, he was supposed to go through all these things. And similarly, Dronacharya was very wise from the childhood of Pandavas. He knew what's going to come, how these two, they is going to play together, and, you know, whole thing is going to come out, and finally there's going to be war. So he told Arjuna, while teaching to Arjuna, that when you grow up, you know, one day it will come where you have to fight me. So at that time you should not hesitate. Then Arjuna promised, yes, I'm going to fight. So he knew. And he knew that I'm going to be on the opposite side and you are going to fight me. But then for some reason, which reason, it's like Krishna's plan, he didn't switch to Pandava's side.
Mm.
He had to remain in Kaurava's side.
So they internally knew,
yes,
Krishna's
exactly.
plan,
yeah,
and
then
yes.
they were,
yeah,
like great enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are very few devotees of the Lord. Let's go to text 11.49, 11 chapter 49. So there Prabhupada quotes one more reason, so that makes it more, you know,
clear.
Clear. 11.49.
Page
494. So I'll just read the. I'll read these few lines. I think third or fourth line it starts. I'll just read few lines. So in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was worried about killing Bhishma and Drona, his worshipful grandfather and master. But Krishna said that he need not be afraid of killing his grandfather. When the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to disrobe Draupadi in the assembly of the Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent. And for such negligence of duty, they should be killed. So, that's one more. Prabhupada quotes here, right? There it's a financial term. Here he's quoting this one. So there are multiple reasons, not just one.
Actually, the verse itself has finance.
Oh, right.
Even though desiring only gain,
yeah. That's right, yeah, correct.
Artha gain something.
Mm.
Yeah, artha, right.
Atva artha kavas to guru.
Yeah, yeah.
Guru. Because Arjuna and
yeah.
Krishna is like, even though they are fighting for worldly gains.
Worldly
that's
gains,
right,
yes.
That's right, yeah. Because he knows Duryodhana anyway is fighting for a worldly gain. Because they are supporting, so... So Garima, you missed the first chapter
yeah.
exam.
No, second.
Second chapter. No, first chapter.
First chapter. Oh, yeah, first, not the
so okay. Sometime next Saturday, some...
This Saturday.
This Saturday.
Yeah, this Saturday, Prabha and Prabhu are taking.
Okay, so I can also
you
take.
Can also come.
Okay.
Yeah, we what time here?
5:30, I think.
5:30 to 6:30.
5:30 to 6:30, okay.
We are thinking of in our home, I'll send you the address.
Okay.
Okay.
Alright.
Prabhu, you also...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Although I don't know what my schedule is tomorrow,
okay.
But I'll have to go around.
Yes.
Everybody is okay. Okay. So Arjuna is thinking if we kill them, then everything will be tainted with blood. So we'll cover the last verse for today. Imagine Krishna Arjuna talked in Sanskrit and they were able to understand.
We are not able to
actually, yes, even one more thing, right? That was going what I was going to tell Prabhu is that they are speaking pretty rapidly, right? We are stopping verse by verse. So if you follow continuously, then it makes more sense, right? Then
yeah.
You break each sentence, take it
yeah.
in context or something.
We are
right?
trying to decode
yeah.
and you're not trying to learn.
Plus, you don't have the back story of what's happening. You're just starting in the middle of the story. This is not like some Bollywood movie where whichever scene you start from, you can understand the movie.
Mahabharata, part of Mahabharata.
Yeah, this is just a small section of Mahabharata actually.
Okay, Prabhu. Amit Prabhu can say.
Nor do we know which is better. Conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Purport. Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is the duty of Kshatriyas, or whether he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, begging would be his only means of subsistence. Nor was there certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them, and their cause was justified, still if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat for them. All these considerations by Arjuna definitely proved that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. His desire to live by begging, although he was born in royal household, is another sign of detachment. He was truly virtuous, as these qualities combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Sri Krishna, his spiritual master, indicate. It is concluded that Arjuna was quite fit for liberation. Unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge. And without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. Arjuna was competent in all these attributes over and above his enormous attributes in his material relationships.
Okay, so now it begins Arjuna's fifth reason, which is confusion about duty, indecision.
Indecision.
Arjuna is saying, you know, I don't know which is better, whether conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us in the battlefield. That means we are going to be killed. So actually, when reading this section, when Prabhu was reading this section, right, I was thinking how many calculations he had to do, right? Many, you know, state diagram. If this happens, after that, if this happens, what will happen? If this happens. So this is what happens if we make decision on our own, right? If at all you have to make a decision, like, you know, big things, like, you know, moving to India or something. Okay, if you go there, what if we don't get association? You know, what if we don't get devotees? You know, what if our in-laws, we have to, our parents, relatives, you know, there is a pressure, we'll not be able to offer, we'll not, so many things, right? Yeah. If you stay here, what, so many things. Anything, if you do on our own, that's what, actually, it's going to cover in the next verse. We are faced with material perplexities. Perplexities in material confusions. But then if it's Arjuna's simple statement was, whatever Krishna says, I'm going to do, then it becomes very simple, right? Right? It's very simple. But we need to find such a person, first of all. Because we don't have Krishna here right now in front of us. So we need to somehow have that faith in such a spiritual master who is loyally, faithfully following Prabhupada. Then our life also will be very simple. All we have to do is, you know, get some instruction, follow it. Life will be very simple.
I think this verse talks about Arjuna's, you know, so many, as she said, perplexity. He's so confused what to do, what not to do.
And then, but the amazing thing about Prabhupada is, now Prabhupada is glorifying Arjuna, right? His qualities. So that's the mystery, you know, we asked Harivilas Prabhu that question, right? Sometimes Prabhupada glorifies Arjuna as soft-hearted, great devotee of the Lord, all those things. Sometimes he says, you know, it's because of material conception of bodily compassion,
weakness,
all the weakness of heart, all those things. So, how do we put both together? Then what Harivilas Prabhu told in the class is that Arjuna has good qualities, so-called good qualities. But above and beyond that, if you don't use it to surrender to Krishna, they will become useless at some point. Eventually, Arjuna will come to the state where he will use those qualities to surrender to Krishna. So, overall, he will be successful. But until that time, that's why Prabhupada uses this mixed thing. He has these qualities. That means he has a potential to exhibit pure devotional service. So, these qualities are, sometimes it's very favorable. These people who have such qualities are very amenable for devotional service. But until they take devotional service, if they just stick to their qualities, they are going to go up and down some point or the other. When situations are good, you will exhibit them. Situations are bad, you will not exhibit them. Right? That's why we had that verse where devotees who are not surrendered to the Lord, whatever qualities they have, it's going to be useless because they are on mental platform. Manorathena, we read that, right? They are on the chariot of mind. Chariot of mind. Is it that verse? Yeah, we have that verse. We covered that. So it's, but whereas a person who surrendered to Krishna, they just follow what Krishna says. So they are not on the dictations of mind. So their qualities are going to be transcendental. And another point Prabhupada is saying that because he wants to desire by live by begging, he is ready to do that. That means he is so detached.
Yeah, Prabhupada is quoting that quality.
So he didn't want kingdom for himself. Like, you know, I want to be the king, emperor, everything. Right, that's why, and he was considering so much, you know, what if I kill this person, what if I kill this person, nobody is there to enjoy, and so many things he's thinking beyond and above that, above and beyond that, he's thinking, I'm even going to live by begging. That means he's so detached. And main point Prabhupada is telling here is, he's also, he can control his, he's completely controlling his mind and senses. Because for somebody to live by begging, it's not easy, right?
If you're a Kshatriya, you can imagine. If he's ready to give up everything and go for begging, that means he has really control over his mind and senses, not anything.
So the last four, so that's why Prabhupada is saying, based on all this, Arjuna is quite fit for liberation. That means he is now getting ready to submit to Krishna. And at the end of it, Krishna is going to make him qualify. Okay, what is liberation?
because we have heard, right? I hear many times moksha. I think moksha is there, Sanskrit word. So I just wanted to know what's your definition of liberation. Because I didn't know, I never thought, you know, before coming to Krishna consciousness or before reading Bhagavad Gita, I never thought about liberation, what, because I was not so interested in that. So anybody can just tell what liberation is? What do you think about liberation? Because you have come across or you have heard, so I just wanted to hear different definitions of
realized.
Self-realized.
Have you come from material concept? Material things.
So that was you knew before or you come across?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, you did.
That's very good. Came with clean slate and reading the dictionary now.
It's a possible thing, like not to remain as a slave of your mind. So like there will be graduation, gradually you progress there, but definitely for me first step is not to be a slave of my mind. Which will lead me to the next step, like where you...
So what is the final step?
Liberation.
What do you mean by liberation?
Liberation.
I was like, give the whole authority to the Supreme Lord. I don't live with his as per his desire.
Okay.
Chandam vritti jara vyadhi,
yeah.
Breaking away from that cycle is liberation.
Yes.
So that's what first definition I got of. I need to know. Yes, ma'am.
Not having the body identity.
Yes, that's the.
I also agree with this statement, although it's true, but I heard that term, you will get liberated even though you are alive.
Yes,
so
exactly.
What
that
that's a very good point.
Yes.
What is the difference, like contrary?
Yes. So actually, so that point Prabhupada said, right? So the liberation means getting free from the cycle of repeated birth and death. That means you're out of bodily attachment or bodily platform. And the other point is, Prabhupada clearly says, even being in this material world, even being in our material bodies now, you can be on the liberated platform. So how is that?
We're surrendering to Krishna and not doing ourselves.
Yes. So whenever we do any activities, for example in this temple, right, you go wash some dishes. So that's on actually liberated platform.
Transcendental platform.
It's on a transcendental platform. It's not a material platform. So when you're doing that activity, so that means if you're really sincere, if you're just doing, okay, if I'm washing some dishes and if I'm thinking, oh, I know I have this problem, let me my problem get solved, I'll do this thing, that means that's not a proper consciousness. But if you're just thinking, no, I want to just serve Krishna by helping this, you know. If you do that, that means you are already on the liberated platform.
And the more your whole day is filled with such activities, the more you are, more times of the day you are liberated.
It's your liberated.
And there's less agitation also in the mind, right? And
yeah.
You have seen, I mean, like, we ourselves go through so many different emotions throughout the day.
Perplexity.
And when we are in that mode, sometimes we are in that mode, sattva mode and
all
God that, and everything.
Yeah.
Then we feel inside that balance, like whatever, the agitation is not much.
Yes.
But when we say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, then
yeah,
the agitation is really, we can see our own thing if we go
so
a little behind and see, right? Not get involved in our emotions too much and put a kind of some barrier and watch the emotions. We can see the difference.
That's
and
right.
It's so beautiful and so we know what is the right path to do. Like, calm down.
So she's talking about liberation from material modes. Right? Whole day, these three modes of material nature, they are described like, you know, one man is being pulled by three ropes. So everybody, all the modes are always in competition. That verse is given later on. Krishna says, you know, sometimes sattva wants to take superior position over rajas and tamas. Basically passion and ignorance. Sometimes passion takes over. Sometimes ignorance takes over. All the time they are in competition, pulling the soul here and there. That's why we feel all this tension. But then if you do devotional service, then you are situated in shuddha sattva, pure goodness. You are above the modes. Even they pull us, then we'll think, okay, let me do this for Krishna. Let me do my best for Krishna. Okay, my mind is agitated today. Work was not good, but still I have to go to class. Let me do it.
So you're pushing.
You're coming above the modes.
So you're liberated for periods. You can be liberated for periods within a day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's true. That's how it works, yeah.
See, now, for example, now, right, 1 hour, when we're discussing Krishna Katha as purely as possible, and hearing some, like, as much as...
No, we don't. For example, this activity doesn't have many material motives, right? I'm pretty sure nobody gets anything. You basically lose more.
Kind of liberation activities. Akarmic activities.
Yes, devotional service. Our devotional service is akarma, right? You don't incur karma. So they are on the liberated platform or transcendental platform.
Transcendental platform.
So a person who does that gradually becomes like that. And while doing it also, we are considered, that's why I told. So who is a pure devotee? There is a ripe mango and a raw mango. So pure devotee is whom we see completely fructified, right, in pure devotional service. But at the same time, a person purely following pure devotional service sincerely is also considered a pure devotee, because it's just a matter of time that raw mango will become a ripe mango. It's just a matter of 30 years, 40 years or some lifetimes, that person will become pure devotee. So
don't
still potential is there. So of course doesn't mean, you know, now we start claiming that, you know, I'm pure devotee, all those things.
No, that's our observation, because we are seeing.
So that much we should treat others, actually, not ourselves. We should not think about ourselves like that. We should see others who are sincerely following as like that. You know, they are, because of why? Because they are sincere and Krishna is merciful and devotional service is potent. Because of these three aspects, just a matter of time, if they stick to the path, they are going to manifest the symptoms of pure devotees. And also, and it's not for manifesting symptom, because of for them to, you know, reawaken the relationship with Krishna. That's why they are trying to do all this, right?
She mentioned 30-40 years, and she just said this, she just quoted that. But that Prabhupada said, you know, in next moment you can become Krishna conscious, pure devotee. He told that when somebody
asked. I thought he is going to tell that's too less, you know, it should be more.
But so at least there is a positive hope, right? That's the something we need to consider.
No, that's what Prabhupada
then
said.
Then it takes time, let it be, but still there is a hope that...
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Prabhupada said, you know, somebody asked him, like, you know, how long it's going to take
you are
to become pure devotee or Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada said, next moment. But if you are really, you know, sincere, we can, anyway, each one has to measure them. So I can tell, you know, it's
we already have a relationship with them, Krishna. Right?
It's already there.
I mean, it's just
that's why discover
yourself,
right?
Because we are going
yourself,
in the wrong direction.
Right? Right, right, in that sense, you are talking about time, right? In Vishnu Sahasrama, it says, yes, smarana matrena janma samsara bandhana is there. Right? So,
yeah.
But that, it should stick. That's the thing, it's like you keep throwing.
No, whenever you remember, you are out of the birth and death, right? So that means you have to remember all the time, 24
so
hours.
Like you keep,
that's the whole thing.
Throwing that, sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't stick.
Yeah.
Once it goes and splatters perfectly, then we are all set.
And Hari Vilas Prabhu, I was just referring to some of the notes from Hari Vilas Prabhu's class. I think he talked about that renunciation and that liberation piece also. Now I'm trying to stitch them together because something doesn't make sense to me of what I've written. But he talks about, like, one of the statement he made was, after liberation begins real bhakti. Okay, then remember. So was he talking about, like, where liberation is basically the renunciation from all the material world, and after that is when it starts, you start the bhakti. Is that what?
So
pure bhakti.
So basically that is, see, now whatever bhakti we are doing is pure devotion service.
Mix.
But this is called sadhana bhakti, where, you know, it's called bhakti in probation. That means we are practicing to act like pure devotees. Like, you know, try to remember gopis. What do gopis do? 24 hours, they remember Krishna's pastimes, you know, what they enact Krishna's pastimes, they talk about Krishna, they sing about Krishna. So that is pure devotees they do. So what we are trying to do is imitate them. We are trying to, you know, somehow or the other chant 16 rounds while doing that, remember Krishna, sing. So this is called probate bhakti. You know, it's like job under probation you keep for some time. This is called sadhana bhakti. While doing sadhana bhakti, because we know at the same time we are dealing with modes, we have bodily concept of life, so many things, right? These things will go away ultimately to take us to the stage where we realize that we are servant of Krishna, and everybody is servant of Krishna, right? So that basically self-realization. Then basically you are now Brahman platform. You know that you are soul, not the body. So after that is called liberation. After that, pure devotional service begins. Because pure devotional service begins when the state where one is in a spiritual platform, completely spiritual platform. So, but the benefit for us is sadhana bhakti will take us from this material conditioning or so called non liberated stage to liberated stage and beyond that.
How will we get your knowledge,
Mataji? I think one other thing, also one profound statement that Hari Vilas Prabhu made, which I kind of always remember, is that we are struck with this forgetfulness, right? We generally tend to forget things. That's the reason why we don't learn from our past mistakes. That's why we are still like getting back to like, you know, the gross nature of material nature and kind of getting it. So, which is like so true, right?
Yeah.
We don't understand the pain that we have undergone.
That's right. Correct.
Is there.
Yes.
But the moment you go and eat some laddus and all, it's like pretty good and you feel back to this.
Yes. So, what's the solution for that? Which is recommended for us?
That's a good question.
So let's brainstorm. Now we have a problem. So, when
practice.
We see.
Practice.
But main thing is. So, what is the solution for forgetfulness? If you keep forgetting something, what you have to do?
We need to constantly.
We have to hear, right?
Okay.
If you keep always, you know, if you keep forgetting your keys, you tell your wife to remind you always. So where did I keep my keys? So keep hearing. So the solution for forgetfulness is, because we forgot Krishna, we forgot our relationship with Krishna. So solution is to hear about Krishna. So either, you know, Bhagavad Gita or, you know, he can hear sweet pastimes of Krishna.
Sadhana?
Yeah, sadhana. Here pastimes of Krishna with his devotees, or pastimes of devotees also, you know, pure devotees, how they do, like Pandavas, pastimes of Pandavas. Because Krishna is not alone. Krishna comes with his devotees.
Even chanting should also help, right?
Yeah, but main specifically targeting forgetfulness, what we were told is just hear. Because hearing not only removes that all the... There's a very nice sequence in Bhagavatam. It starts with hearing, like Shunvatam, Smakata, Krishna. This whole like 8 verses or 7 verses, it shows how a devotee transitions from, like how we are talking about a raw state where, you know, nothing is there. He just starts hearing till in that 6-7 verses, the devotee attains pure love for Krishna. And all nurtured by hearing about Krishna. All the way, what goes on is hearing about Krishna. All through the while, what happens is, you know, his anarthas go away, he gets freed from passion and ignorance, and then he becomes fixed up in devotion service. So basically, this is nishta. Anartha nivritti is over. We discussed these stages, right? Ato shraddha, sadhu sangha, anartha nivritti, vajana kriya. Right? These stages we discussed, right? So same stages.
No, I don't remember.
So the same stages are covered in these verses in a very, you know, very hidden way. But ultimately we can see in 6-7 verses, this devotee by hearing can come to the pure, perfect love for Krishna.
What those verses are in there?
It's in Bhagavatam. I'll send you reference. Yeah.
Mataji, when you said hearing about pastimes or Pandavas, whatever, right? When you see them, we only think about them, right? Krishna will come into picture sometime. For example, I'm just talking about some scenario. So you are not thinking about Krishna.
Yeah, that's the. So what?
But you said it's all related to Krishna.
Wait, I'll ask them only. So is Krishna means Krishna alone by himself? So how do you?
Krishna's devotees.
Yes. So Krishna is never alone.
No.
But you may see them individually, you know.
Correct.
That's the point. When we hear, somehow we should hear from proper sources in such a way that they bring about Krishna in their pastime. See, these pure devotees will not do anything without Krishna consciousness. Somebody has to bring that out. Then we can see Krishna in their activities. Right? See, for example, when we hear about Bhishma, we'll figure out, you know, why he had to do this. All then we know, you know, it's really Krishna consciousness all throughout.
Right.
Then we remember Krishna also, we remember Bhishma Dev also. So that's the thing. And other thing is, even otherwise, we can appreciate, you know, as devotees, how they are acting in their whatever duties or, you know, dealings. How as devotees they are representing Krishna and how they are behaving as a glorification for Krishna. So this is an example for us. Okay, they are doing like this. This is all with their pure Krishna consciousness. This is all they are doing.
So as you said, Prabhu, like Arjuna, for example, Mahabharata is Arjuna and all. So if you know the clear picture, for example, if I tell something about Arjuna, So immediately, you know, you should be able to Arjuna. So Arjuna is the best friend of Krishna. Like that relationship comes. Like if you say Arjuna means, in your mind it should be there. Krishna, Yudhishthira, Bhishma, like that.
Yeah.
So that's how you can remember the.
See, also other practical example is, let's say you see your child, right? You will see your child, but immediately, somehow subtly, you remember your wife, right? You will not know that you are remembering her. But you will.
True?
No, it's connected.
It
they are connected, right?
No, is it true? I don't know. We don't know. So we are asking, is it true?
And also, for example, maybe not about kids and wife, but especially this is said about husband and wife, because they are considered one body.
Mm-hmm.
So our spiritual master used to say, if he sees a wife, he will immediately tell the husband's name. Even if, let's say, separately, then maybe he saw, okay, Shamala, how are you? How is Madhava? He will ask. Even he's not there, but the moment they see this person, they know this person.
True.
They're related, right?
That's
so that's so they are intimately related. So devotees are intimately related to Krishna. The moment we think about devotees, you think about Krishna.
Yeah.
In path of perfection, it's like if you see your son's slippers.
Yeah, you
remember your son.
Son.
Yeah.
So everything is related.
Relation.
To Krishna,
yeah.
So
you should
see
in that relationship. Now other point I was thinking about, you know, the forgetfulness. I was thinking practically, like, right? Because we have so many things on our mind, like from, I don't know whether it's from the upbringing, education, all these things. I think that's why our mind is all, you know, full of information. So when we start hearing something, so that replaces, you know, that memory cells, take out all the junk thing, and you put in the memory in your cells.
Like,
no, I was just
whatever
thinking.
Whatever you
like
are using
this.
That is on the foreground, rest will be the
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you take out your
when
memory,
you, start
things,
using it
you put
active.
Something new in that cells. So that way you will remember. No, that's what I was thinking. That's
yeah,
how
that's why we put. So basically, if there is an ink bottle with blue ink, you want to make it white with milk. So one way is pour everything out and pour again, start pouring. Or what Prabhupada said is, you start pouring milk. Then what will happen? Gradually, everything will become white.
Yeah.
Eventually. So we have all the junk, right? You start adding Krishna more and more. This will get replaced. Eventually, you know, we'll remember Krishna. Hopefully, that's our prayer. Okay.
You yourself tell like this, where?
No, again, it's all, you know, that sincerity. If you have that one extra sincerity, that factor, it's just like this. That's what Prabhupada said. If you're sincere, it will be a moment to become Krishna conscious.
Okay. So who is supposed to